Hi, everybody.
Welcome to week two.
It is a stormy day outside here where we live. There's thunder and there's rain, and it's perfect for cuddling and reading books. And we are just grateful to be here with you today. If you can hear us, just hit us up in the comments. I want to make sure that our audio is working. It looks like on our end, all the things are lighting up the way that they're supposed to, but we'd love to just have you drop a comment in the chat and say, yes, we can hear you, or no, we can't. That way we can kind of like not worry about it the rest of the feed. Yes.
Sounds
Thank
great.
You, Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon.
So in Bagley news for today, before we dive into the lesson, we had an important doctor's appointment this week.
We did. We found out we're having a girl.
We're having a girl.
Yep. So baby Bagley's a girl. That's been exciting.
We're so excited.
Yes, we are.
I'm so excited.
I'm excited too. I was convinced it was a boy.
It's true.
And so I've been having to change my mindset around a little bit. From boy names to girl names, but.
So that aside, we are on a real emotional high this week, and we've been looking forward to having this conversation with you guys all week. So
this is our favorite topic.
It probably is our favorite topic. I'm not going
to
lie.
We're so excited to talk about this.
And the reason is because I think when I really realized that when I understood this topic, everything changed for me, especially when I was single. Like, the way that I approached dating, the way I looked at marriage, the way that like all the anxieties that I had about dating and relationships and marriage went away when I understood this principle. And so I'm really, really excited to share it with you, because I think one of the biggest struggles, especially when you're dating, is that anxiety of like, am I with the right person? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, like tons and tons of worries. We get worried about like, are we spiritually, physically, emotionally, mentally a good match? Can you trust this person to be with you? Not just now, but over the long term. Or like, we hear all these horror stories of people who get the rug pulled out from under them, and like they get married in a few weeks or a few months or even a few years later, all of a sudden like everything comes crashing down, and nobody wants that to be them.
Right.
But we hear those stories, so we know it's a reality. So there's this anxiety that kind of comes along with like, is that going to happen to me? I want to be careful with my choice. You want to know, like, the two of you have, like, there's a lot of added pressure in our church, because when we get married for not just till death do us part, but for time and all eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And man, like you're essentially jumping in, you're sealing yourself to somebody. And it's like, we're not just going to do this for a while. We're doing this forever. Am I ready for that kind of commitment? It feels heavy. And it's no wonder that sometimes we feel anxious and we feel scared. I know that when I dated through my 20s, I dated mostly from a place of fear. I was always worried, like I was always looking for some reason to end the relationship. And maybe it wasn't consciously, but it was always subconscious. Like sometimes I would feel like, oh, she's not as all in as I am. And then I would break up. Or she's gone all in way too fast beyond my comfort level, so we'd break up. Or maybe she didn't take spiritual stuff serious enough, and so we'd break up. And then maybe she was taking spiritual stuff a little too seriously, so we'd break up. And like maybe it was, we're moving physically, like in the physical department, we're moving a little faster than I wanted to be comfortable with. So we'd break up. And like anytime I felt anxiety or fear, my instinct was to run away and to call off the relationship.
Right.
Did you?
Looking back on my dating relationships, subconsciously, I always gave myself an out. So I would date someone who was about to go on their mission, or I was about to go on my mission, or someone was about to go to boot camp.
You were dating someone who was unavailable.
I was always dating somebody where I had this safe out. And I think that was that protection that I was giving myself because of this anxiety and fear that is really normal when it comes to dating and happens.
Yeah.
And when I learned this principle with Nate, it was when we were dating, I think when we talked about it, it really shifted it all for me, made the anxiety go away, and made it feel like I was ready. I was ready to do this. I was ready to jump in head first.
That's awesome. I love hearing that.
Yeah.
So I think what most people are looking for when they're looking for a partner, subconsciously or consciously, is they're looking for somebody who makes them feel safe, somebody who makes them feel secure, and somebody who makes them feel happy. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, you always hear, like, you see the memes that say, don't settle for anyone who doesn't make you happy, or
if it doesn't make you happy, you should leave.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
Things like that.
And what we have found is that actually the worst thing, the thing that will destroy your possible relationships faster than anything else, is if the purpose, the why, like there's this really interesting talk by, it's not a church talk, but it's a TED talk by a guy named Simon Sinek. And it's about starting with why. He wrote a book called Start With Why. And he talks about like how the how and the what are really important. Like what a good marriage looks like is really important, and how to create a great marriage is really important. But if you don't have a why, like if you're not really clear what your why is, the reason why you want to have a great marriage, then the what and the how, it's really hard to sustain them. It's really easy to like lose momentum and lose the desire, and you lose the passion for it. And you kind of get burned out. And I see a lot of couples get burned out in marriage because they have lost focus of their why. And when we go to church, a lot of people talk about like the message that we get is why do we get married? To multiply and replenish the earth.
So that we can inherit the highest degree of celestial glory.
Right. So it's like we talk about it as if it's like a ticket that you get stamped or validated so that you can gain access to the celestial
kingdom. Kind of like the cap on all of the covenants that you make.
Right. And to me, like those are great reasons to get married, but they're not the best reason to get married.
We want to take it a step further today.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the purpose of marriage.
And we want to give you a reason for your marriage, not just for marriage in general, and give you the best reason for marriage now. So what we've discovered is that there's this awesome quote by Dr. John Townsend, and he wrote the book Boundaries, awesome book. And one of the things he says is people who always want happiness and pursue it above all else are some of the most miserable people in the world.
Let that sit for just a second.
I'll say it. Should I copy it and put it in the put it on the screen?
Probably.
I'm going to do that. Let's see. There you go. Do you want to read it?
People who always want happiness and pursue it above all else are some of the most miserable people. Some of the most miserable people in the world.
And the interesting thing that happens here is if happiness and comfort are the things that you seek, what happens is you get married, and you kind of make your partner responsible for something that's your responsibility, which is your happiness. And when your partner stops making you happy, maybe you get in an argument, maybe they let you down, maybe they break a promise, it's easy to go start seeking that happiness elsewhere. And I've seen so many people where, they aren't happy in their marriage. And so then maybe they go start talking to coworkers or friends or exes, or maybe they go look at pornography, or maybe they go get lost in sports, or they become obsessed with work, and they start focusing more of their time and energy on other things that bring them validation and a sense of happiness and purpose. And they spend less and less time thinking and working on their marriage. And so it's really interesting. These people end up being miserable. They're miserable in their relationships. They're miserable in their life. And they're constantly chasing something that's not there.
We don't want to say that happiness is a bad thing.
We're going to teach you a better way to get happiness.
Happiness though is a great thing. But when you have this specific purpose that we're going to talk about, happiness becomes a byproduct of that.
Right.
It becomes something that comes without having to chase after it so much.
Yep. So this is where the gospel principle of eternal progression comes in. So we're taught that we are eternal beings, that we are, our focus is to be, I mean, we were invited to become like God. You know, Christ said, "Be therefore perfect, even as I and my Father am perfect." And it's hugely important, like this idea of preparing to meet God in this life. Like this life is the time where we prepare to meet God. It's the time where we try and make ourselves better. It's not a vacation. This is a time for us to tackle difficult things. And when you tackle difficult things, it pushes you outside your comfort zone. It feels uncomfortable. When you are progressing and doing things for the first time, it requires you to confront some anxieties and stuff like that. So our perspective in our marriage is that the why of our marriage isn't for us to be happy. It isn't for us to be comfortable. It isn't for us to like just have babies. The why behind our marriage is
growth.
It's growth.
Very simple.
There's an author named Dr. David Schnarch, And he wrote an amazing book that's on our recommended reading list on, if you just go to mormonmarriages.com/resources, we've listed a bunch of our books there. And that's one of the books that we've listed. And he says, marriage is the ultimate human growth machine. So if our goal in this life is to prepare to meet God, and marriage is the ultimate human growth machine, there's nothing that I've experienced in my life that has made me more aware of my imperfections and more aware of the areas that I need to be a better human and the ways that I can level up and be a better husband, a better soon to be father, a better man than being married to Angelin.
Thanks.
Yeah. I don't want you to take that as a not compliment. That was definitely
No, I said thanks. Yeah.
I
feel like growth happens with any relationship that you have in life. You grow when you interact with your coworkers, when you interact with your boss, when you interact with your family and your friends. Any relationship that you have will mirror or reflect back onto you areas of your life that you might need to improve on. Areas that maybe you're blind to in yourself that somebody else can reflect back on you and help you learn and discover how you need to change. And the thing that's different about the marriage relationship is that there is no other person that will reflect your areas for growth, the need for growth, than a marriage partner. Yeah. You can't really escape your marriage partner. You're sleeping in the same bed and they see you at your best. They see you at your worst. And so that's how the marriage relationship differs from any other relationship that you have in your life.
Absolutely. And the cool thing about having a growth-centered marriage is that when you start to encounter trials and struggles and obstacles and things that cause you stress and anxiety, instead of thinking immediately like, oh, I guess we're just not meant to be, or I guess I just married the wrong person, or we shouldn't be struggling with this. Like, this shouldn't be something we're struggling with. Instead of thinking that way, when you bump into these problems, when you have that growth mindset, especially together and as individuals, you start to think like, oh, what could I do differently so that this big problem turns into just a little speed bump?
Mm-hmm.
How can I improve, and who do I need to become in order for the issues that we're bumping into to not be issues anymore?
And the interesting thing about this is, in the absence of a growth mindset, your partner then becomes your adversary. Because when you bump into a problem, you're fighting against each other.
I'm the one standing in the way of your happiness.
Right. He's standing in the way of my happiness. But when you have a growth mindset, then you become teammates. If you bump up into a conflict, if you bump up into an area of your life where you're struggling, you can then look at it together and think, okay, what do we need to change so that we can grow? What do we need to do to change to help us be better? And then you become partners and teammates instead of these people that are butting heads constantly.
So if this is like a light bulb moment for you, or you're having a personal realization, I would love if you just hit us up in the comments and just let us know like, oh, wow, yeah, maybe I need to change my approach a little bit towards dating or towards my marriage right now, or towards my relationship. We'd love to hear from you guys. We can see the comments, so feel free to leave them there.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to jump into this into more detail. So one of the things I love about this also is that marriage basically is in my experience, it is the area of life where I have been able to unlock the most potential in the shortest amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not saying that if you're not married, that you can't grow and that you can't progress and you can't unlock your potential. But one of the reasons why marriage is so amazing and how it can change you and transform you is that it can help you be this person who accelerates their growth and learns more about, like, I think what Angela was talking about is like exposing blind spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's things that we do that we're completely unaware of, and things that we do that impact other people's lives in a negative way. And we're completely oblivious to it. And then we get married and we're forced to be with somebody 24/7. And all of a sudden your imperfections get mirrored back at you. That's hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It creates a little bit of anxiety. And one experience I had, just to illustrate this, is I've always experienced anxiety growing up. And especially around social interactions. I think social anxiety was something that I struggled with. I didn't really like being in crowds. I didn't like being the center of attention. And before I married Nate, it was really easy for me to maintain that. I didn't have to worry. It was my decision whether I went to a party or interacted with people. And Nate thrives on social connection. He has a podcast, and he's a public speaker, and he's a writer, and he's constantly putting himself in the public light. And that was not something that was comfortable for me at all. I did not like the idea of having that kind of attention on me. And so when we got married, no longer could I just hide in a corner anymore. I couldn't avoid a party just because I wasn't feeling like interacting with people. Because now that I had Nate, one thing that really brings him joy is that social connection. So I was forced to do these things, go to these conferences.
Start a podcast.
About a year into our marriage, he came to me with the idea of starting the Mormon Marriages podcast. And it terrified me because I would have to put myself out there in front of thousands of people. And because we were married and because of this growth mindset that we had, I decided to lean into it, lean into this discomfort, lean into this anxiety, and found that it's something I really enjoy. And I never in a million years.
People love hearing your voice.
I never in a million years would have been the host of a podcast or been on a live stream on Facebook and now I edit the podcast, and I found this new talent that I had where I find great satisfaction in creating these things, and it's something I never would have done without Nate. So that's an area of our relationship that pushed me completely out of my comfort zone and allowed me to grow and discover new things about myself that I never would have learned or discovered without Nate.
Now you hit a great point here. And this is something that I wish somebody would have taught me a long, long, long time ago. And it's that there's two different types of anxiety. So Angeline talked about how, like, when she met me and I'm more social and more extroverted and I wanted to start a podcast and do all these things, like that for her, especially, that came with some anxiety. Like, she felt stressed. She was scared. And in life, like, you're going to be met with anxiety. And there's two reasons that your brain kind of triggers that anxiety in your head. One is to protect you from danger, an imminent threat. Anxiety is a great built-in mechanism that's like a warning indicator that says, hey, something's off here. You might want to be aware, like, keep yourself safe. You know, you may not want to take this risk. It might be dangerous. But most of the time when we experience anxiety, it's really just us getting outside our comfort zone and experiencing something new for the first time. So if you think back about, like, back on the time, like, your first day of school, always anxious because everything is new, like a new teacher, maybe new building, new friends, new class. Like, I remember always being so anxious on the first day of school, like almost in tears. The first time you give a presentation at work or in public, giving a talk at church. I remember one time I was giving a talk. I was like an 11-year-old in primary. And my dad was like, you're going to memorize your talk this week. And I didn't want to memorize it. All the other kids always read their talks. So I wrote mine out on note cards. And then I got up to the podium and I just had one of those moments where everything goes blank and I panicked. And my dad was there in the back and he just sat there and I was like, can I have my notes? And he had them in his pocket. And he was like, no, you can do it. And I'm like, I want my notes. And I stood there for, like, it felt like an eternity going, Dad, give me my notes. And then finally he came up and he still wouldn't give me my notes. And he whispered in my ear and I felt so embarrassed. But, like, just the stress and anxiety that comes from doing something new, driving for the first time. I remember how scared I was to do that. With the first time I got behind the wheel and drove around the church parking lot. And then my mom goes, okay, now drive us home. I'm like, ah, but, like, now driving is nothing for me. Like, I almost do it subconsciously. But when you're doing something for the first time, when you're in a relationship, when you're encountering something that's uncomfortable, that's a growth opportunity, it's going to cause some anxiety. And you need to learn to become friends with your anxiety. Anxiety is not a sign from God that your relationship isn't meant to be. That's not how God communicates with us. You know, we're taught about the fruits of the Spirit, and they're all beautiful, wonderful things. Like, one of the fruits of the Spirit is not anxiety. The fruits of the Spirit is not fear or dread. like the fruits of the Spirit are wonderful things like peace and faith and hope and all these amazing things. And so I think sometimes we mistake the anxiety that we feel in relationships that's growth related for a sign that maybe our relationship isn't meant to be. And I just want to encourage you that inside your relationship, if you are bumping into that anxiety, if you're bumping into some discomfort, that might be something for you to lean into instead of run away from.
And here's the tricky part with that is that both kinds of anxiety physiologically manifest themselves in the same way. And so it really takes some mindfulness to sit back when you're experiencing that anxiety and think, okay, where is this anxiety coming from? Am I in danger? Are there red flags in this relationship that I may not be noticing?
Yeah.
And if there's not any of that, and you're like, okay, well, then why am I still feeling anxious? It's probably because you're having some growing pains and you just need to lean into it a little bit. Yeah. I think of those physiological symptoms like standing on the edge of a cliff and you're just about to jump off into the water and the tightness in the chest and the heart beating. And you just have to grow comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yep.
And it's hard. It's not easy. And it takes some practice and it takes some learning.
Yep. Adriel has a great question. Says, love you guys' approach. What do you do when one partner starts getting into all this and learning this stuff? Is there a tactful way to recommend sharing this with a partner? I think it's a great question because
it's a really great question.
Like having a growth mindset is really great as an individual, but it's even better when you're both on board and you both share the same commitment, especially from the very beginning. So if you're in a relationship right now and you're like, I like this. I like this approach. This is the why that I want to have behind my marriage, because when trials come along, I want to be able to say, yes, this is an opportunity for us to grow closer together and to become stronger and better. Like, you don't want your partner going like, oh, we should break up because I'm uncomfortable. A great way to introduce them to these concepts is just to like, listen to a podcast together, find out what is their medium that they prefer to learn through the most, whether it's reading a book or watching a video or listening to a podcast. Like, I remember when we were engaged, we listened to a lot of podcasts together.
We did.
We listened to a lot of Jennifer Finlayson Fife, her Ask a Mormon Sex Therapist episodes, so that we could have she'd have a conversation and then we would have a conversation about her conversation. So she introduced topics that were maybe hard to bring up on our own. And then when we listened to her talk about it, we could go, hey, what did you think about that?
Right.
And it made it way easier to talk about this stuff. So I wouldn't try and manipulate your partner into it. I would be really honest just about what you want.
Hey, I liked this. Will you listen to this with me?
Yeah, it's really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I learned this thing today and it really like made me think, and I would love to listen to it with you and
have a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to know what you think about it. Does this sound like something that you'd be interested in? Nobody likes to feel manipulated into something, but if you have an open, honest conversation and you express to somebody that it's something that's really important to you, if they love you, they're likely to care enough to actually check
and then
it out.
Really listen about their thoughts.
Yeah.
Because they might have some more thoughts that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah.
So
if you lean into the anxiety and you experience some growth, one of the coolest things is that we talked earlier about how the goal of your relationship shouldn't be happiness. One of the byproducts of growth, like you said at the very beginning, is happiness.
Is joy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like
coming out, like going back to the podcast situation, and nowadays whenever I do a really awesome edit on the podcast, I'll run up to Nate and make him listen to it with me, and just something that I never would have experienced otherwise. And so we're not saying that, oh, you shouldn't worry about happiness and happiness isn't a thing. Happiness is a fruit of growth. And like we said, by their fruits, you shall know them. So when you're growing in your relationship, you will experience happiness and joy as a byproduct, for sure.
For sure, for sure. So now a lot of people might be asking the question, okay, so growth should be your why. Growth is the purpose of your marriage. When you're married, you get the opportunity to unlock this potential that you more quickly than you would when you were by yourself. And so the next question is, okay, how do we grow?
Right.
Because I don't know about you, but like, you can drop a comment in the chat and just say me or something if you can relate to this, but have you ever set a goal for yourself and you get really committed? Maybe it's like, I'm going to run a 5K, or maybe it's, I'm going to learn to play the piano, or I'm going to learn to paint, or I don't know, whatever it is, whatever your goal is, and you like lock in on that thing and you're like, I'm committed, and you set up a morning routine.
I'm going to get up at 5:30 every day.
and you like lock it in and you like grit your teeth and you white knuckle it and you dive in, and the first couple of days you do really great. And maybe the first couple of weeks you do really great. And then after a while, like for me, it's my nutrition is always the thing that gets to me, is I really would like to eat healthier. And I do a really great job for a couple of weeks. And then I go to a family party and they made chocolate chip cookies. And I look at the chocolate chip cookies and the chocolate chip cookies look back at me and they go,
I'm so delicious.
And I'm like, no. And they're like, just one won't hurt. And I'm like, just one. And I put one chocolate chip cookie in my mouth. And then all of a sudden I've eaten all the chocolate chip cookies. And at that point I'm like, well, screw it. I'm just going to go buy some Oreos. And I'm completely off the bandwagon. And I've lost momentum and I lose my commitment. And I don't grow the way that I wanted to. The behavior doesn't stick.
So
can you guys relate to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting a couple of me's.
Yep.
So I think that's a normal human thing. And one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately is, how do we get our growth to stick? How do we, these opportunities where we want to be better in life, how do we get that to stick? And so I put a lot of thought into it. And I think I actually am very confident, I'm sure, that the difference between couples and individuals whose change, whose growth sticks, and those who can't, who kind of white knuckle it and they rely on willpower and then fail over and over and over again, is the difference is the ecosystem that they're in.
Right. The surroundings that they surround themselves with.
Yeah. So I want to share a principle with you, what I call the growth ecosystem. And it starts off by basically likening the way that we grow to a plant. We get analogies. Oh, what happened to your arm?
When I was cooking breakfast this morning,
oil splattered.
Splattered oil.
Anyway, in the scriptures, over and over and over again, there are all these analogies and these parables of plants, right?
Oh yeah.
Like we've got the parable of the seeds, and you've got the parable of the olive tree, and then we've got in Alma chapter 32. This is one of Angela's favorite scriptures.
It became one of my favorite scriptures after we talked about this growth ecosystem and we talked about the growth mindset. So in Alma 32, it compares faith to a seed. Now, I was reading it one day after we had talked about this, and I, instead of comparing faith to it, I compared marriage to this seed. And our love, romantic relationships. And it was fascinating to me because the first step that you have to take is obviously planting the seed. But let's say you're married now. You planted the seed, it started to grow, and it was good. And just like in Alma 32, it grew. So you knew that it was going to be a good seed. So what comes next? And in Alma 32, 37, I'll just read what it says here. It says, and behold, as the tree beginneth to grow, you will say, let us nourish it with great care, that it may get root, that it may grow up and bring forth fruit unto us. And now behold, if you nourish it with much care, it will get root and grow up and bring forth fruit. So the next step of growing your marriage tree so that it eventually gives you fruit is to nourish it. And again, it goes on and it says, if you neglect the tree and if you don't nourish it, and it's going to die, and you might be tempted to say, oh, well, this must have been a bad seed, and you get rid of it because it died. But that's not necessarily the case. It could just be that it lacked the nourishment and the care that would have allowed it to grow. And the cool thing about a plant is that yelling at it's not going to make it grow. You can't like force it up out of the ground.
You can't bribe it to grow.
When it's surrounded with the right ecosystem, like we're saying, it just grows. It has no choice but to grow. And that's what we want to teach you, to have this ecosystem in your marriage so that it doesn't feel like white knuckling. You're not giving yourself ulcers over trying to get your marriage to be better. It has no choice but to flourish and grow because you're giving it the proper nutrients.
Yep.
That it needs.
Beautiful description.
Thank you.
So let's think of the basic ecosystem of a plant. You've got three things. You've got sun, you've got rich, fertile soil, and you've got a steady supply of water, right? That's an ecosystem, a good ecosystem to grow a seed. So if you plant a seed in rich, fertile soil, you give it some sunlight every single day and you give it access to enough water, the right amount of water, what happens is that your seed grows. It explodes. It has no choice but to grow because it's in the right ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So for human beings, the ecosystem is very, very similar. So we want to draw a couple of analogies. So the first thing that we talked about is the sun in the plant's ecosystem. Now, in a human being's ecosystem, the sun for us could be a goal or an ideal that you can strive towards that inspires and excites you.
And I like to think of this like sun, S-U-N, versus sun, S-O-N, as in an ideal to strive towards. We can look at Christ for that. Christ gave us the ultimate example of charity and love and how to treat other people. And so that would be a really great sun to have in your marriage, is striving for a Christ-like.
To be more Christ-like.
To be more Christ-like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we get that invitation in 3 Nephi. You know, he says, therefore I would that you should be perfect, even as I and your Father who is in heaven is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And Elder Holland gave a talk a while back called Be Therefore Perfect Eventually. And he said, we should not demean or vilify ourselves as if beating up on ourselves is somehow going to make us the person that God wants us to become. No, with a willingness to repent and a desire for increased righteousness always in our hearts, I would hope that we could pursue personal improvement in a way that doesn't include getting ulcers or anorexia, feeling depressed or demolishing our self-esteem. That is not what the Lord wants for primary children or anyone who honestly sings, I'm trying to be like Jesus. So the goal here is to have a goal that inspires you. So if you are single, like this is a really great opportunity for you to start setting clear goals of how you can show up in the world that reflect the type of person you'd like to be as a partner.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember back when we were in our singles ward, and I was the Elders Quorum president at the time, and the Relief Society president would approach me on a fairly regular basis and say, hey, can the sisters do anything for the elders? And I was like, yeah, you can. And she would always say, what? And I said, express gratitude. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, you know, I'll be honest. As a single guy in the church, the majority of the messages that I got were, there's too many guys that are looking at pornography. There's too many guys that aren't active enough in the church. There's too many guys who aren't taking the gospel seriously. There's too many guys who don't have a temple recommend. There's no guys are asking me out. And just lots of complaints about especially the YSA men. And it happened a lot. And I'm not trying to knock the sisters here. I'm just trying to show an opportunity. And if you are a wife and all you do is complain about all the ways that your partner is letting you down, your partner's not going to enjoy being married to you very much. And so what I would say to this Relief Society president is, how many elders did you pull aside on Sunday and say that maybe they passed the sacrament? And you say, hey, there's probably a lot of things you could have done this week that would have jeopardized your worthiness. And you showed up and you passed the sacrament today. And that meant that I could renew my covenants. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for making the choices that you make on a regular basis to be that type of a man, or just somebody who's at church.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, there's a lot of places you could be right now, but you're here at church. And I just want to say thanks. I see you. And I'm grateful that you're making the choices that you're making. A simple thing. But I guarantee you, down the road, those men, like if they're presented with a temptation or a choice to maybe sleep in, they're going to think back on those moments where people notice them and notice they're doing the right thing. And it's going to give them strength and encourage them to show up and continue to make the right choices. If you're a guy and like you want to be the type of, like you want people to feel like, just think about the qualities that you want to exhibit inside your relationship. Exhibit those qualities. If you're a service-oriented person, make the goal that when you see somebody in need, you stop and you help,
mm-hmm.
you know? If you are, if your goal, like the goal that you're striving towards is to be the kind of person that leaves people feeling good when you're around them, you know, offer them compliments, perform service, lift people up, and just make it a conscious effort that if you think something positive, you say it. Like those are some really small ways that you can start to make strides forward to prepare yourself to have a great marriage, or if you're in a relationship, to like strengthen your relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Anything you want to say about that?
No, that was great.
Okay, cool. Just want to make sure. Oh, look at that. Okay. The second part of the growth ecosystem. So we talked about the sun. The second part is the soil, right?
Yes.
So you got to plant, your seed in rich, fertile soil if it's going to flourish and grow. If you plant it in sand or in clay, it might not get the nutrients it needs and it could shrivel up and die. So the soil is super important. Also, really interesting thing about the soil, you know this, but if when the storms of life come along and like you get big winds and you get rain and that hits the plant, if it has deep roots in the soil, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, if the permafrost comes and it snows and the ground freezes and the roots are deep enough, that plant's going to survive. It's not going to die.
Right. It's going to have the nutrients that it needs.
Yeah. So the soil is really, really important. So do you want to tell people what soil is?
So soil is your community. I don't know if you've heard this quote by, is it Jim Rohn?
Yeah.
Where he says, you are the sum total of the five people you spend the most time with. And in your marriage, we like to say your marriage is the total of the five couples that you spend the most time with. So who you surround yourself with affects you subconsciously without even realizing it. And we like to think, what if the attitudes and the actions and the sayings of the people that you spend the most time with were as contagious as the coronavirus? Then would you be spending time with that person? Are the people that you're spending time with inspiring you to want to be better? Or are they just complaining about their spouses all the time and talking about how they're just another child or the ball and chain? Like, what are the people that you're surrounding with inspiring you to be? And what are they infecting you with without you realizing it? A plant just absorbs the nutrients that are in the soil around it. It doesn't really have to think about it. It doesn't pick and choose which nutrients that it absorbs. It just absorbs what it's got. And so the community is your soil, who you're surrounding yourself with.
And just like you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with, your marriage is going to be the average of the five couples you spend the most time with. So if there are like friends and family members who don't necessarily have the greatest marriage, you have to make a concerted effort to find people who do have the type of marriage that you want to emulate. And man, carve out time in your schedule to be around those people. Those are the types of people that you want to have in your corner. If you run into any problems, you can turn to them for advice. Like great marriage. Here's the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that great marriages don't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
Like you don't, it's not just the two of you that creates a great marriage. It's created by your entire community. And my belief is that one of the biggest reasons for the church is it's supposed to be the type of community that we can turn to for inspiration and to lift one another up and to help each other with these issues. One of the struggles that I have experienced is that it doesn't always feel that way.
Yeah.
When I go to Elders Quorum, it doesn't always feel like a brotherhood. And I'm not trying to drag it down, but, I wish we had more of that in church. And if you're not getting that there, then you need to cultivate it yourself. Okay. So that is...
There were some questions.
Oh, there were some questions?
Yep. This one right here.
So if you have good friends and you've been around for 15 years, but they're in a dark place right now, what do you do? Great question. One of the things about life and marriage is that you're not always on a positive upward trajectory. Not everything is always going to be rosy. So you want to surround yourself with people and you want to be the kind of person who is an advocate for the marriage of the people that you care most about. Like when people are in a crappy place, it's important to have
like boundaries. Brendan says, try and be that couple for others too.
Yeah. You want to be that couple for others. You want to be the kind of couple that people look at your marriage and they go, how do I get that? I want something like that one day. So,
if you're with a friend or you're with a couple who's complaining, you don't have to join in that. It can be if they say, oh, my husband's just a third child. I'd be like, oh, my husband is so great. He did this today. You know, just kind of change around the the tone of the conversation a little bit.
Yeah.
And don't allow it to go to that dark place. And obviously we're not saying like get rid of these people in your life, but
well, sometimes we are.
Well,
I'm
it's true, but you can also be a good influence to other people.
Right. But don't stick around people who are dragging you down just to be a good influence under that right. pretense.
Right.
Choose wisely who you spend your time with. So if you do have friends who are struggling, be an advocate for the marriage, not the individuals. Like, don't pit them against each other. I would say always listen with empathy. And like one of the things that I've said to some of my closest friends is, I need you to listen to me right now, but I need you to not believe anything that I say. Does that make sense? Like, sometimes you just need a place to vent. And if you can be that safe place for a friend and let them get all the negative emotion out and then throw it out and don't remember it and don't hold any judgments against their partner and say, okay, I get that you're feeling this way now. I get that you're frustrated. I get you that you're overwhelmed. Now, let's talk about what you are responsible for and what you can do to make a difference and make a change.
Right.
You know, what are you infusing into that relationship? If you are somebody else's soil, what are the nutrients? What are the behaviors, the values, the words, the beliefs that you're infusing into them? Is it that they can overcome their challenges? Is it that they can be better, that they can hold themselves accountable and be responsible and step up and be a better version of themselves and overcome these obstacles? Or are you just saying like, yeah, that's really hard. Maybe you should end things. Like, two very different approaches.
And everyone's going to have bad days.
Yep.
And everyone's going to have peaks and valleys like we talked about last week. It's just, what's the pattern here? What's the pattern that is constantly going on with a specific person? And maybe we just need to make sure they're not in that group of five that we're spending the most time with.
Yep. Cool. Now let's talk about the last part of this ecosystem for growth.
So we've got the sun.
We got the sun. We got the soil. So the sun is, you're having a goal to strive towards. Your soil is your community.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have water. Now, one of the cool things about water just in nature is like, I remember, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, scientists got the first picture of water on Mars and they were like, yeah, they were so excited because water means we can sustain life. You know, if you're in a desert and you come across a giant mud puddle, you know, every creature from the desert is going to be there at the mud puddle. You know, you might find lions and elephants and like
the water hole.
Yeah. Everybody, yep. Alligators, everybody goes to the watering hole, whether you're predator or prey, because that's where life is. That's where plants are. And it's really amazing. And so water is a necessity for the growth of plants. And for us, there's something that's absolutely necessary. If you think of any time in your life where you experienced something, where you experienced explosive growth, maybe you really excelled at a sport, or maybe you learned a musical instrument, or maybe you were really good in a subject in school or a specific project that you worked on. Maybe it's like at work, you excelled at something. Almost always, this one thing is going to be present, and that's a sense of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So,
whether you had a coach keeping you accountable, yep. Or
I'm thinking about the job of a coach
keeping you accountable.
A coach's job is to look at their team and see where all the weaknesses are and tell them where those weaknesses are, so that they can work on strengthening them and helping them work as more of a cohesive unit. I remember we both took piano lessons growing up, and like the goal of a piano lesson is that you go take you like practice all week. And then you go back to your teacher and you show them the progress that you made. And then they either teach you new techniques and help you get to the parts where you're feeling stuck, or they introduce you to a more complex song, something that's outside, just enough outside your comfort zone that it will stretch you, you know? And having that sense of accountability in life is what helps you grow. But most of us, if you look at your marriage, most of us don't have a built-in system of accountability.
And it really shouldn't be your spouse.
Why?
Because when your spouse becomes your accountability partner, it risks them turning into like a motherly or fatherly figure. Or,
and why is that bad?
Nobody wants to be married to their mom or their dad. Like that kills intimacy. It doesn't promote that. You want them to remain your romantic partner.
Yeah.
You don't want them to become your taskmaster or the one cracking the whip. It doesn't work that way.
No.
So you need to find someone outside of your marriage that can, or some way outside of your marriage that can help you remain accountable. So what are some of those ways?
Well, one of the reasons therapy is so effective for a lot of couples is not because the therapist is really teaching you that much new stuff. It's just that the therapist is there to meet with you 1 week, And then you come back a week or two later and they ask you, hey, that plan that we put together, how did it go? Did you do it? What went well and what didn't go well? And because you have somebody who you know is going to check in on you, you actually do the stuff that you know you should be doing.
We love our therapist.
Yep. One of the first things we did was we found a therapist that we meet with, like, I don't know, every 4 to 6 months.
And one way to make your therapist super happy is if you come to them just for maintenance.
Yeah.
If you say,
we're not on the brink of divorce. We love each other very much. We have an amazing relationship and we just want to have you in our corner in case we need
you. We want a third party who is exposing us to those weaknesses that maybe we're blind to. Cause just like we talked about earlier, how you might be blind to your own weaknesses until somebody else comes in the picture. It's the same with your marriage. There might be things that you're blind to that you're not seeing. Maybe there's some arguments that you're constantly bumping up into that you just can't seem to find a resolution to. It's amazing to have that third party person.
Yep. So that's one thing you could do is like get a coach or a therapist. Another thing is like you could start your own accountability group, like have a group of friends that really care about their marriage and get together every couple of weeks and have conversations about what's going well and what your goals are and what you're working on and how you're trying to be better. Ideally, this would be Elders Quorum and Relief Society, but if that's not happening for you, you could start a book club, you could start a Facebook group. That's definitely something you could do. Or like, this is what I do full time. My goal is to provide opportunities to hold people accountable. And it's, there's people out there like me, if you don't like working with me, but there's people out there who provide a sense of accountability and give you kind of a direction and a goal to strive towards. And hopefully provide you with a little bit of community that are way less expensive than about the same price as like Netflix membership or something like that, or changing the filling your car with gas. But the point is that the people who experience the most awesome marriages, the quality of marriage can be measured on a scale. Some people have amazing marriages, some people have miserable marriages, and then there's everything in between. And the people who have the most amazing marriages have all three pieces of this growth ecosystem in place.
They may not realize they do.
Sometimes completely
subconscious. They almost always do.
But if you want a seed to grow, you have to nourish it. And the way to nourish a seed is you give it sun, soil, and water. And the way that you nourish a relationship is you pick a goal, whether it's a long-term goal or a short-term goal, preferably a short-term goal that aligns with a long-term goal that inspires you, that gets you excited to wake up in the morning.
Not something that you use as a point of whether you're failing or not. That's not what we're doing here. It's just something to push you out of your comfort zone and help drive you forward.
Here's a couple of examples. Like a great short-term goal would be, I want to give my wife a passionate kiss every single, like 6 seconds or longer every single day this week. Because that's kind of the things that I want to have in our relationship. or another goal could be, one of my goals this week is to be more helpful. So I'm going to do the chore that my wife hates the most. And I'm just going to do it without her having to ask. I'm going to do it every day this week and just try and make her life a little bit better. Or one of the goals could be, I'm going to ask more creative questions. And so every day I want to ask my wife a question that will help me learn something new about her. So, you know, there's like cool apps and stuff that you can download that have lists of questions, and I'll text her or ask her one of those questions every day so I can make sure that we're staying in tune with each other. And if you do those things consistently over time, like you are continuing the connection, you're strengthening your relationship, and most of them are a lot of fun. So that's like, those are some examples of small goals that you can make that will help level up your relationship. You know, give lots of compliments, express lots of appreciation to the people who are in your life. We just did an interview with Dave Schramm, and he, one of the things that it should go live on Monday on our podcast. But one of the things he talked about is 2 before 10, call 2 people before 10 o'clock every day and tell them, just check in with them and tell them how much they mean to you in your life. It's like an amazing little goal. And then the next part is that soil, like surround yourself with people that support you and that are advocates for your goals and your relationship, and that will infect you with positive things that will make you a better person, not negative things that make you a worse person. So if you have like really cynical, critical, negative friends who are always like pointing out the flaws in the world and can't see anything positively, like as hard as it is,
might be time to find some new friends.
It might be time to find some new friends. And we've both had to do that. Like there's people that we really used to spend a lot of time with and love that we've slowly just kind of like their influence has faded in our life so that we could make room for people who have more positivity. And then that last thing in that triangle of people who have extraordinary relationships is they've always got somebody or something, some way to hold them accountable, mm-hmm. To make sure that they're achieving those goals. That's the way that the gospel is built. Like, if you think about Christ, he gave us the ultimate invitation to return to his presence. Like, we want to return to live with God. Like, that's an ultimate goal. We want that highest degree in the celestial kingdom. And then we meet regularly with our community, and we're supposed to uplift and nourish each other. And we talk about the body of Christ and how one piece of the body, like, we can't all be eyes. You know, we all compliment each other and lift each other up. And then there's a sense of accountability. Like, we have temple recommend interviews, and we have commandments that we're supposed to follow and that we're held accountable to. And those are the things, if put in place correctly, that drive us towards becoming the very best version of ourselves. And if you implement those things into your marriage, into your relationship, with the why of, I want to have a growth-centered marriage, what happens is that no problem that comes your way is insurmountable.
Right. Doesn't mean it's comfortable.
No.
But it doesn't mean it's insurmountable.
So when I learned this, when I learned the purpose behind marriage and how to make my marriage awesome, I was like, man, so I don't need to be scared of this anymore. If I have a growth mindset, it doesn't matter what goes wrong. It doesn't matter what imperfections that I have or what insecurities she has. It doesn't matter how many flaws we have or problems that we bump into. If I know that she has a growth mindset and she knows that I have a growth mindset, when we bump into something that's uncomfortable and hard and difficult, we know that it's the two of us versus the problem and not each one of us versus the other.
Right.
And then when we surround ourselves, when we have clear goals and surround ourselves with awesome people and have a system of accountability and people who can help us to overcome those obstacles, man, the things that take other couples weeks or months to overcome, we've literally dealt with in minutes or hours. It's unbelievable. And it's exciting, guys.
It does make it really exciting.
It's so much more fun.
Yeah.
So I want you to take the challenge right now. If you're single and you're like looking for that eternal relationship, I want you to take the challenge of shifting your perspective, that the relationship isn't to make you happy. It's not to make you comfortable. It's not to help you feel content. The reason that you are getting into this relationship is to get exposed to your weaknesses and your flaws. Like, early on in our marriage, I think the thing that I struggled with most is I'm a fixer. And I took great joy in my ability to fix things and help people. And like, it's part of the reason that I do what I do is I like helping people overcome their struggles. And early on in our marriage, Ange would experience like some anxiety, and I would take it personally. Mm-hmm. I'm like, my wife isn't happy. She's not like feeling great right now.
I must be failing.
It must be something I'm doing wrong. Yeah. So I'd start to feel anxious and insecure. And my way of dealing with my anxiety was to try and fix her. It's like, oh, let's fix the problem. Let's talk about it. Let's tell me what's going on. I want to know. And then she would start to feel like more of a failure, and she'd start to feel more anxiety, and she would downward spiral, which would escalate my anxiety, which would make me want to fix her even more. And it turned into this super dramatic thing. And I've had to learn something that I had never learned before, which was how to self-soothe, how to feel my own emotions and feel insecure and be like, this probably isn't about me. And if it is about me, she'll come talk to me. And what I need to do is just give her space to process things and she'll be okay. And I know one of the things that you had to deal with was like your way of dealing with anxiety in the past was to just run away.
Shut myself in my room and not talk to anybody or go for a drive. And now having this person who was relying on me, who wanted to know how I was doing, I couldn't just do that anymore. And he exposed me to the fact that I did not have coping mechanisms for my anxiety. I didn't know how to cope. And so that was one area that I needed to lean into and grab a therapist and try and figure out, okay, I really need to learn how to cope with this, because it's not just affecting me anymore. Now it's affecting my spouse. So many things. I mean, we could sit here all day and talk about
this stuff.
Yeah.
Morgan asked a great question. So does this mean, I'll put it up on the screen. So does this mean that you could create a successful marriage with practically anyone?
That's a tough question.
I don't want to say yes to that question, because I think that the growth, having a growth mindset and being willing to create this growth ecosystem is the gateway to creating a ridiculously awesome marriage with somebody that you love. But I don't want to say just marry anybody. And if you have this mentality, it will work out, because that's not necessarily like, that's a, to me, that's a, love is more complicated than just boiling it down to one specific thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, I think every person has their own definition of what's important to them in a marriage, and what they're looking for in a partner. Some people are looking for a similar family of origin. Some people are looking for, there's a really great quote by a guy named David Schnarch. And he says, I'll paraphrase, but he basically says, most of us get married for the wrong reasons, but we learn to stay married for the right reasons. And so the reasons that you might be looking to get married, there are bad reasons, but like maybe you want to start a family. Maybe you don't like being alone. Maybe you hate being single. Maybe you're looking for somebody that you're really compatible with, or somebody who complements your weaknesses. Maybe you're looking for somebody who shares your beliefs and your passions. Like, there's a lot of things that you can look for in a partner. But ultimately, what I would recommend is that in that mix of things that you're looking for, one of their priorities should be that they have a growth mindset, and they want to create this type of growth-centered relationship, that's important to them.
Right. Yeah. For example, if you want to have kids, it's probably not going to work out with someone who doesn't want to have kids.
Yep.
So there are those things and those factors that are going to go into whether or not a relationship is going to be successful. But having this growth mindset helps it be more successful.
Yeah. I mean, there's very few things that will help more.
Right.
So.
Right.
Awesome, guys. Let's see if there's anything else on our lesson plan. I think that covers just about everything.
Yeah. So action items. What to do?
Yes.
What's our action item for today?
So action items. You could do one of three things or all three things. One, and
depending on how much you want to really dive into this.
If you're in a relationship, like, let's start creating that growth ecosystem. One, pick a goal. What's an area of your relationship skill set that you want to improve this week? Do you want to be more complimentary? Do you want to express more gratitude? Do you want to be more service oriented? Do you want to, like, what is the thing you want to focus on? And pick one repeatable thing that you can track, yes or no, I did this thing, and start doing that, whether it's with your partner or with complete strangers, if you're sick, or your friends and family, if you're single, doesn't matter. Start cultivating those habits and those, and start practicing setting like small goals for yourself. Number two is sit down and write down the 3 to 5 people that you spend the most time with and the 3 to 5 couples that you spend the most time with. And write down what are the positive things that they are infecting you with, and maybe what are some of the negative things that you don't want that they might be infecting you with, or that you might be absorbing from them, and see if you can get a little bit more clarity around. If you can't think of anybody in your life whose marriage you really admire, it might be time to start looking for somebody and talking to them and saying, hey, like, if somebody approached us and said, hey, will you be our marriage mentor? We'd probably be like, yeah,
absolutely.
So flattered, you know, let's make that happen. And then the third thing is set up some form of accountability. I can get the words out. Whether that's like looking for a therapist or a coach right now who can help you to kind of see some of your blind spots and create a game plan to move forward. Maybe you join a program. Maybe there's a course that you can get involved with. Maybe you just put $10 on the line and you say, tell your roommate, hey, this is my goal right now. And if at the end of the week I don't hit my goal, you get this $10. Like, whatever that thing is, set up some system of accountability in your relationship.
Yep. So we'll send out like the journal prompt, kind of like we did last week, that has all these items on there that you can do for next week.
Yep.
And next week's topic is also, this was our favorite topic to talk about, was the growth mindset. And next week is our second favorite topic to talk about. And that's the foundation for which your marriage can really succeed on. We're going to kind of compare it to the parable of the wise men and the foolish man.
Yep.
And really help you to know what is a really good, solid foundation. Obviously, Christ is great, but we want to take that a step further, like we promised you.
And get more clarity and more practical around
what that actually looks like
to have a Christ-centered marriage.
Right.
And the cool thing about this next week's lesson is that whenever I talk to couples and ask them what they're struggling with, like 95% of the time they say communication. If you can identify, maybe, I don't know, I think a lot of people can relate. They feel like they have communication issues. And what I found is that when people describe their problem, that they have problems with communication, it's really that they don't have specific words to describe what they're really struggling with. And this thing that we're talking about next week is going to get rid of like 90% of your communication issues in relationships. Mm-hmm. If you have this foundation in place, if you have like these things that we're going to talk about locked in, and they're super simple and super easy, but people don't talk about them. And if you just get focused on these things that we're going to talk to you about, the majority of your communication issues and your arguments and stuff go right out the door. It's amazing. So
tune in next week.
Very excited to share that with you. Mm-hmm. If you enjoyed this lesson, please share it with your friends and make sure you subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, come check us out over at the Growth Marriage Podcast. Angeline and I are continuing to have some of these really interesting and complicated conversations with amazing people over on that show. And two podcasts was just too much for us to handle, so we decided we would consolidate all of our effort and attention into one. We hope we get to continue our relationship with you over there. And we hope you enjoy all the content that we've been working on while we haven't been posting here on the Mormon Marriages Podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you soon.